Welcome to Burning River Radio. I'm your host, Joe Koblitz, and I'm here with Justin a whole lot. Here to talk Cleveland Indians baseball to start. Live stuff. Things are fast approaching. Nobody knows they're actually going to start. It's kind of like time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. But on the last day of the winter meetings, they do the Rule 5 draft for everybody, especially the players who get selected and get to move to a new city because their old parents didn't love them enough to keep them. I was waiting for Justin to make a noise. I was seeing how long I can go.
That was pretty interesting.
Before he actually says something. I guess before we hit Rule 5, there were a couple players, a couple things happened of interest with the Indians prepping for the Rule 5. And, of course, I don't have that list in front of me. But on the outs of it, because they had to make some roster moves, they cut Kyle Crockett and DFA'd Dylan Baker, both of whom were on the 40-man roster. They dropped both those guys to make room. I think this is one of those things, Crockett especially, I always say this, I have such a short timeline. I have no patience when covering this stuff. And I always feel like if you're not going to give a guy his chance when he has obviously proven that he can do nothing else in AAA. Jesus Aguilar is my perfect example. He had obviously proven he was done in AAA. There was nothing else he can learn, and you're keeping him down there for two more years. When you're doing that and a guy's been on the 40 for 3 years and you keep sending him to AAA and playing him there and you're never giving him a real legitimate chance in the majors, please cut them. Let them go. Some other team wants them. Some team is always looking for a left-hand specialist. I guarantee Crockett finds work very quickly and probably gets paid significantly more than he would have with the Indians. This is probably best for both parties, honestly.
Unfortunately, I mean, I don't know what Kyle Crockett did or who he somehow someone had. I guess he was lacking incriminating evidence against Francona that Michael Martinez had. I don't know. I'm really not sure. I mean, he averaged a strikeout an inning in AAA, and I know he hadn't had great major league success, but it's not like they gave him a lot of chances. I mean,
but he did in his first season, and he was hurt last year a lot of the time.
I know he had a back injury last year.
They brought him up like they brought Cody Allen up, which is he got drafted, and then the next year he's in the major leagues. And
yeah, he got drafted in 2013, came up in 2014.
Yeah, it really seemed at the time like, oh, that means he's a superstar, and they're gonna ride this guy forever. And then very quickly he got knocked out. And I don't know. I do know. The Indians value their clubhouse chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I don't fault them for that. I think if you can have, let's say you can have 25 players that are going to win 85 games or whatever, or 90 games every year, and you can have 25 guys who are nice, who are great with fans, who are great in the clubhouse and all friends, or you can have 25 guys who are assholes. And they're both teams are going to win the same exact number of games. Give me the nice guys who are great with fans. Now, I'm not saying Crockett wasn't, but if that is the issue, then I mean, I guess I could see where they would say maybe Tyler Olson, like Francona liked Olson better, or something. There had to have been something because it wasn't talent. There's no way.
I mean, to be fair, Crockett's talent wasn't good enough. It's not like they made the wrong decision. Olson was great.
But he was great in his first season, and Crockett was also great in his first season. So,
I mean, he had chances in the second season. It's not like he pitched 31 games in 2015. He wasn't quite as good. He had the back injury last year, and then they never really gave him a shot this year, which I'm not sure why, because they seem to think Olson was better. So I guess the back injury
It's just weird to me. And I think not to get too far into other guys, but I mean, like their treatment of Urshela last year was very odd, because there were multiple times last season, 2016, when Urshela could have came up, especially in September, and they never called Urshela up. And then in 2017, they needed him, So they brought him up, and then all of a sudden he's starting. You know, like he didn't need to start. He needed to be on the roster, but he didn't need to start. And some strange
decisions.
He
didn't really start. He was for that whole win streak, he was defensive replacement, basically.
He played every day. He played half a game every single day. That's pretty much starting. He did not need to play as much as he did.
Supposedly,
and
yeah.
He started games in the postseason.
Well, now he's out of options, and so is Eric Gonzalez. So,
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see one of them gone. And we may have a situation like last year. Last year, the Indians lost Anthony Santander in the Rule 5 draft, and they protected Jesus Aguilar, and then they cut Aguilar during spring training. They could have just cut him. And that's like moves like that that you know you're going to do. They knew they weren't going to stick with Aguilar.
After they signed Encarnacion,
Encarnacion was after.
To be fair, they didn't have Edwin signed.
Yeah, it wasn't until after Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, so that I guess that you can't blame.
But they knew there was a good chance Santana was leaving after 2017 anyway, so it would have been worth keeping Aguilar just for that. Like even beyond when they did, like it would have been worth keeping him on the roster. But they didn't. Obviously, they moved on. And that's fine. It worked out well for Aguilar. But now you're in a similar situation with Ursula, where you're like, well, we got Yandy Diaz. We're trying Francisco Mejia out at third base. You know, we've got Jose Ramirez probably should be playing third base, and they're going to keep Eric Gonzalez and Giovanni Ursula, and then one of them is probably getting cut next spring or traded or whatever, and then maybe you lose somebody. So let's talk about some of the guys they could lose. Well, I guess you're talking about the guys they can't lose first. They protected, now, I don't have the whole list, Julian Merriweather, who's a right-handed starting pitcher, but is probably going to be a reliever in AAA. And Yu Chang Chang were the two biggest names that I noticed. Chang is a shortstop. He played in AA this year. Is a ton of power. I think he's probably going to be a third baseman in his major league career. I do think he will have a major league career. So that's obviously good protect. Who are the other guys?
Well, they protected Eric Haas at the end of the season because he could have been a minor league free agent. So.
Yeah, that was a month or so ago, I think.
Yeah, so they protected him because he would have been a minor league free agent. So he's in the fold now. Eric Stamets and Willie Castro. So that's the weird thing. So that, if you look at their – obviously we're talking about Rule 5 right now, but if you look at the 40-man roster, they have four catchers and they have – so many middle infielders, if you include Lindor and Ramirez and Kipnis, Gonzalez, who plays middle infield. And now they have Stamets, who was in AAA last year, Chang, who was in AA, Castro, who was in high A, and then you could even get Wacky and throw Urshela on there because Urshela played a little bit of shortstop and second down the stretch to add to his versatility. So you've got all those guys right now that are on the 40-man that play catcher or...
You should always have 3 to 4 catchers on your 40-man roster.
Most teams only have 3. Not many have 4.
I think 3 makes sense, but they are also trying to move Mejia to third base. And I think, honestly, one of the other guys has to move to first base.
This is the first year the Indians have 3 in a while.
Yeah, and I think it's been a mistake because every year one of them gets hurt, and then they got Adam Moore and Eric Kratz and whatever, and now they finally have – like, I think Eric Haas, this is his first year on the 40, so he's got plenty of options. Start Haas in AAA, and someone gets hurt, and that's the guy you bring up. I'm assuming that they're going to start with 3 on the major league roster. But if somebody gets hurt, then you call up Haas, and you have that guy you can go up and down with as a catcher, which is very useful, I think, because catchers get hurt all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they had to go against Chris Jimenez last year because Gomes and Perez both got hurt.
Yeah, so that makes way more sense to me to have that than to have all those middle infielders when you have Kipnis, Ramirez, Lindor to fill two positions. There's 3 starters for 2 positions.
Right. I just don't think – I'm just going to say now, I don't think they're going to go into spring training with all those middle infielders. I don't think they're all going to
Okay, they've got 40 guys on the 40-man.
Yeah, they're
so
full.
If they sign a free agent, we don't have to talk about who. Like, it's not like if they bring back Santana or if they bring back Joe Smith or whatever. If they sign any free agent,
They got to DFA someone.
They got a kid. Yeah. And like they just signed Rob Refsnyder. So that took up.
Oh, they played. That's not our middle infielder, actually. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. So, but that just took up another spot because they grabbed him from the Yankees and they had to give him a 40 man spot.
So
any,
I think
any of those guys.
I think for sure, had they not protected Haas, Stamets, and Chang and Merriweather, they all would have gone. I think they all would have been taken. I think the only questionable one was Castro, but I think.
I do not think someone would take Castro.
No, but I think that losing Santander last year might have left them a little snake bitten. And I think a lot of people were pointing to what the Padres did. The Padres, I think, hid, I want to say, three or four guys on their 25-man roster from Rule 5, and one was an infielder. So I think they're just a little bit worried that someone with his upside would be taken in it with nothing in return. So, I mean, to be honest, I think they have a lot of trade bait at this position right now. Like, obviously, Chang was.
Absolutely.
He was in that. He was supposed to be in the deal for Lucroy in 2016. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I think, he's valued outside the organization.
The only reason Chang is still playing shortstop is because they have to be considering trading him. Because there's no. Like, you wouldn't put a top prospect.
All reports suggest he improved there this year. He would. He did a lot of work with.
He's not going to supplant Lindor.
Not here, but there's no reason to move him off. Like you said, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So if you're going to trade him, but if the plan was to keep him here, then you want him working. He is a – I'm going to say he's probably a borderline major league starter, like potential.
Yeah.
So if he's going to be a major league starter, he's not going to be a starter at shortstop in Cleveland ever. That's never going to happen. And he's not going to be a starter second.
Willie Castro, Chang, Stamets, none of them are going to start here ever. Not unless Lindor gets hurt.
Well, I mean, like, Castro is a borderline. He's still really young, and Lindor's until, like, 2022. So you could be talking about, like, 7 years in the future, maybe Castro. But Chang is older, and he's already at he'll be in AAA next year. And he played in the AFL last year, too, in 2016.
I think adding Stamets was kind of weird, too. But at the same time,
but Stamets, that's the perfect guy you could pick if you were going to take a player – as another team, is a guy who can play three middle infield or three infield positions and
play them well.
Maybe has a little power.
I still don't buy the power because
I know he
increases the fly ball rate a lot, but just knowing that Columbus's ballpark is so small, and he did practically all of his damage power wise there, and none on the road. And the same in Akron, he had a week or two in Akron before he got promoted, and he hit terribly in Akron, but on the road he was fine. And Akron's a huge pitcher's ballpark, so I'm not buying the power, but he can obviously play second, short, and third pretty well, and it's not that hard to hide a guy in your roster.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest type
replacement.
And talking about hiding guys, I wanted to get to that point with Santander. I think Santander was such an easy guy to take for the Orioles because they knew he was going to be on the DL for the first 4 months of the season or whatever, 3 months of the season.
I don't know if they knew that because he played in spring training for them before getting hurt. So I don't know if they
He was hurt with the Indians before
he had surgery, but he was ready for spring training for them.
Okay. Well, but still, I think it's easier to take an injured guy or a relief pitcher or a utility infielder.
I mean, left-handed relievers are the most common picks in this draft, obviously.
And that's why, of the guys the Indians did not protect, I think one of the top guys you have to be looking at getting taken is Rob Kaminsky. He's a left-handed starting pitcher. He didn't pitch a single inning this year, I don't think. Maybe he pitched a third of an inning.
He had one start. He made one start.
Yeah, he pitched like a little bit for Akron, and then he disappeared. I heard rumors that he was in Arizona, but I never saw him.
They did everything they could to avoid surgery. They didn't want him to have surgery, or he didn't want to have surgery. They were just doing everything they could to avoid it. I believe it was his left shoulder.
Okay. But yeah, it was not Tommy John, from what I heard. That was the
only. He had back problems in the past, so
yeah. But I think he's that type of guy who, by his original projection, should be in the major leagues right now if it wasn't for the injury issues. Mm-hmm. That type of guy that you can take who was a starter, like, let's throw him in the bullpen, have him throw to two guys a day, you know, rather than trying to throw five innings. I think that's the perfect type of player that you could take. The other pitchers, I'm not – maybe Leandro Linares, although he just was – he was terrible in AFL.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that because he had such a great year.
And I'm telling you, and I wrote it up in my AFL season end report that I'd never seen him pitch or hadn't seen him pitch since AZL, which was a long time ago for him. And so I wasn't going to judge anything off of that. So I'm judging him off of just this. But looking at his numbers, he was supposed to be a big strikeout guy, and he didn't strike out anybody, and he didn't even get swings and misses. Like, he was contact all the time. And he actually – I guess he had decent numbers. Like, his actual – his straight-up numbers were good, but his peripheral numbers were bad. Like, his ERA was good, but his K rate stuff was terrible.
I saw him like County last year. He blew away hitters. Yeah, he had a 1.76 ERA last year, and then –
He had a 10K per nine in Akron or something like that. So I was expecting him to strike out everybody. And I think he only had one or two strikeouts the entire fall. Now, it was a short period, but he should have had a lot.
If you remember,
he should have been better than that.
He came over with Yandy Diaz. They came over.
Yeah,
he was
a Cuban.
Yeah, and he got more of a signing bonus from the Indians than Yandy Diaz did. So that's why I think it's a little surprising they didn't protect him. I want to say that Linares got at least $1 million.
Well, but Dorcy's Paulino was also one of those guys. And he's up for Rule 5 this year, and they're not going to protect him.
Yeah, if Paulino gets taken, I think the Indians should be glad to see him go.
Thanks for the $60,000 or whatever it is that they have to pay.
Yeah, I mean, he got one point. I think Paulino got like a 1.25 mil. Oh.
It was like the biggest signing they had ever done at the time.
I was tweeting with Jeff Ellis today. I think he's still a scout.
I don't know if he is, but
I don't know. Yeah. But he, you know, obviously he knows the amateur scene better than we do. And
yeah,
he was saying today that wondering if the Indians might go after, you know, some of the Braves free agents now that are minor leaguers from that whole scandal. And
I was
talking
so.
Today, and I said Linares was like their most major. I mean, until they signed George Valera and Aaron Bracha this offseason or during the season, Linares was their last big signing. And before that was Paulino. So they have not made a whole lot of noise in the international scene in the last several years.
Yeah, there's a couple guys I like that are coming up out of there. Like, I mean, Gabriel Mejia came out of there, out of the Dominican.
Well, I'm talking guys that got a lot of.
No, but yeah, none of them got a lot of money. They were all like small signings.
Like me, Francisco Mejia was a big name, but he didn't get a lot of money.
Well, even like we're talking about guys now, and on this list of people that are eligible for the Rule 5, or would be had they not been protected, there are three guys whose names sound similar, if you're American, I guess. Yu Cheng Chang, Xiao Qing Chiang, and Ping Su Chen. They all came up. Oh yeah, Li Jian Chu is also on the list. All four of them played for the AZL in the championship season. What, it was like 2014. They all came out of Taiwan within 2 years, and I think the Indians did that on purpose. But that was like it was a cool thing. They bring in all of these guys, and Chu is now hitting pretty well. He missed some time with injury. Chiang had an incredible season, and he's a ground ball specialist. Chen is okay, but he's a few levels behind everybody else now. He's a relief pitcher. Closer.
I guess.
But it's like they killed the Taiwanese market for 2 years, and then they just like, okay, no, we're done. We're never going to sign anyone out of there again.
Yeah, I think, I guess you said Xiang's eligible.
Mm-hmm.
I could.
Yeah, they all signed the same time, so they're all eligible.
I mean, I could see someone maybe taking it out. He did pitch a double A this year, so he can't go in the double A portion. Because you know there's a minor league portion of Rule 5 where you can draft guys that haven't played in Double A yet, and you can keep them no matter what. You don't got to keep them on your 25 man roster. But Shang pitched for Akron a little bit this year, so he's out of that. I could see somebody maybe thinking about taking a chance on him just because of the ground ball rate. You know, with the fly ball revolution going on and everything, if you get a pitcher, you know, even for an inning at a time, who can keep the ball on the ground, that might be worth looking into. I'm not saying he'll get taken, but I could see where somebody might have interest.
Yeah. And one other guy, I guess, of the pitchers is Arginus Angulo, who was generally ranked pretty high among Indians relievers, and he did make the Fall Stars game, but he was awful in the Fall Stars game and the game before that. And then he ended up the season really well.
He got a little bad luck in that game because
the left fielder dogged,
I don't want to say dogged it, but he did not do a good job tracking out a fly ball that should have been an out that led to a lot of runs. I think he was the losing pitcher in that game, but that was pretty
good. Yes, he was.
Cameron Hill and at least Cameron Hill, I don't know about Cole Sulcer, but Cameron Hill is eligible too, and he's been in AAA for a while. He might.
Yeah, Cole Sulcer is as well.
I mean, relievers are like the most common players to get taken here, so any reliever could be up for grabs if a team likes his stuff or his numbers enough, depending on what information they have on him. Mike Pappy's available. I'm pretty sure no one's taking Mike Pappy.
Oh, that's Mike. Mike. It always thinks that he's going to get taken.
I saw someone make an argument to protect him the other day, and I was like, no, just you're not protecting Mike Pappy. I know he was a first round pick, but
no,
he was a comp pick, but he's been awful. He's not going anywhere.
You could start when you're talking about protecting players and just protect players you think are going to be in the major leagues for you. Like, protect players that you would take in the draft. And so Willie Castro is the only guy that doesn't fit in that. But I think, like, the Indians could use Julian Merriweather next year, so that makes sense. And they could use Eric Stametz. So, those guys make sense to protect those guys. Whereas Mike Pappy, let's talk about, like, 2-3 years out still, maybe being a fourth outfielder.
That's if he can make it. He hasn't really shown that he can hit above AA.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. He's 4 years away from maybe being a ceiling of a fourth outfielder. So there's no reason.
He's 29 years old. Good Lord.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. People get older. Jeff Johnson.
They use Haas this year. I don't think they're going to use Chang or Mayor Castro this year.
No.
I think both those guys are trade bait.
Especially, and like we said, if
they like Aaron Bracho enough.
But if they sign anybody, they're going to have to move somebody. And that's the easiest way to move people. I think you got to trade Chang.
And you can get something good back for him, but they also have some good spot. I mean, they DFA'd Baker, who was an easy cut because I'm pretty sure with his injuries, nobody's interested right now. I'm kind of surprised they didn't DFA Adam Plutko because look what they did to him in September. He got called up to be bullpen insurance for those two doubleheaders in September.
But he stayed around. Sean Morimondo, they sent home.
They sent him home, but remember, they sent Plutko all the way down to Lynchburg to pitch in the playoffs.
Yeah, and then they never brought him back.
Right, he pitched once for Lynchburg, and they never brought him back after that. They said they just wanted to keep him throwing, so they didn't need him to sit there, and they sent Morimondo home. But then Plutko didn't pitch or pitch once in Lynchburg. They never brought him back. That's what I'm saying. With having Merriweather, what do you need Plutko for?
Yeah, they knew they didn't need him. Yeah, if you're talking about cutting guys, I think that could be where you're talking about cutting guys. But I'm talking about trading players who actually would have value to other teams. And I think you're looking up the middle. The last thing I have on Rule 5 is I wish they would have left a spot open. Because the Yankees left J.P. Fireisen open. They did not protect him. And I think he's major league ready right now. And I'd love to see him come back. That would especially make the Miller trade look so much better.
It would have been better if they had gotten Heller back. But.
Well, yeah, but I mean, obviously Heller pitched in the...
Yeah. Yeah, season. I mean, Fireisen had good triple A numbers this year. He had almost a strikeout an inning. He'd be a usable arm, but you know what? I don't know if he's a guy you can keep on your roster all year, because if they want to bring back Joe Smith, I'm pretty sure we can all say that Brian Shaw is not coming back. Your bullpen is Alan Miller, Olsen, McAllister, Otero, and Goody. you add you can add Fire Eyes to take one of the two spots that are open, but then you're kind of stuck, and you can't, obviously you can't send him down if you need to add a fresh arm. You only people that have options are Goody and Olsen.
Think you're missing the fun part
Armstrong
of
got Armstrong got too.
I'm assuming Armstrong will be cut.
There's another one.
I'm surprised he didn't go already.
Well, I think
but sticking it to the Yankees, sign
Joe Smith or somebody else that can be a place.
Yeah, you're really underestimating the point of.
Oh wow.
Bruce, you know, like that was the best part about the Bruce signing. The Yankees wanted him, didn't get him.
Because they wouldn't pay.
They were being too cheap. All right, the last thing I want to talk about today, try to be real quick, but it's never going to be. The Indians have two players up for the Hall of Fame. The ballots just recently went out.
This week.
And
Monday.
Yeah, they usually come in, January 1st, somewhere around then.
It's sometime in January the vote goes finally,
Yeah, I think it's like the first week of January. And you could follow – there's some guy who tabulates all of the publicly known ballots, and he blocked me on Twitter for some reason. I don't know why he blocked me. The only time I find out is this time of year when the results start coming in, people, retweet him, and it'll say you can't see this, and I'll click on it and be like, you're blocked by this guy. I was like, why am I blocked by this guy? I have no clue what I did. I have no clue what I could have possibly did to him. In fact, I think I've quoted his website and given him credit in articles before. So it's very odd. In any event, the Indians have two big names up. Even before we say that, the last Indian to make it into the Hall of Fame as an Indian, I believe was Early Wynn.
No,
it would depend on the year that. No, it might be Larry Doby because Larry Doby was the 90s,
Larry
right?
Doby, yeah, that happened because that happened in the 90s.
Okay, but the last person to play for the did Doby come back after? Maybe Doby even came back after. I'll have to look up actual years. Doby was his last year with the Indians was 1958.
But he won in
Indian. Yeah, I'm trying to think of when Irwin when his season was. I'm going to look it up because I got to be accurate. Going to really win. The last person to play for the Indian as an Indian was Early Wynn in 1963. He's inducted in 1972, so he was inducted before Doby was. Either way, Doby, Wynn, we're talking 1950s. Is on the ballot this year. Who, if they get in, will win as Indians. And that has a reasonable chance. I think Lofton would have went in as an Indian. Sandy Alomar would have been an Indian, but these players didn't have reasonable chances.
Lofton would have.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Lofton, Alomar, Bell, but none of them had a legitimate chance of making it into the Hall of Fame, so they're kind of irrelevant.
They're going to revisit Lofton eventually. Lofton got stuck on a year where the writers decided to be egotistical and say they were going to make a statement about PED users before Joe Morgan wrote a letter about it, and they didn't vote for anybody the year.
Every single year has been like that now, where people – you've got half these people 10 votes. Every single vote complaining, I want 15.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using all 10 and I want 15. The other half are voting for three people, and they're not even the right people.
Or they're just saying they won't vote for anybody until they. There are some writers that won't vote for anybody because they played during the steroid era, which is what. You should lose your ballot.
But if you send in a blank ballot, then it counts as a vote for nobody.
Right.
So if you just don't vote.
And that was what happened to Lofton. They didn't induct anybody the year Lofton was on the ballot. They got a lot of.
And I think that there was a lot of backlog for a time. And it's the main backlog is because of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I believe we're both Hall of Fame steroids. I don't use the steroid argument against anybody at all, personally. Mm-hmm. You were a Hall of Famer before you did them. Then Hall of Famer. Like, that's... It's a percentage. I think, 60, 70% are voting... Not 70, 60% or so are voting for Bonds and Clemens. And that's taking up a spot on their ballot. So then they have to... Everybody else is coming up after that. So then you have to put in the other guys, the Bagwells and Biggios and Griffey's and those guys. They're all filling in after that on those ballots. And then once you get to 10, you're like, oh, I don't have room for Jeff Kent or what, you know, like some random player who was on the ballot last year. So the backlog has existed for years now, and it's going to continue existing until they either elect these people or pull them off the ballot. Mm-hmm. And because of the problem, because of the 10-year rule, now it used to be a 15-year rule, which is even worse. But because of the 10-year rule, you can't just take these guys off the ballot. You have to keep putting them on.
Well, if they fall below the certain amount of vote total, that they fall off automatically, and that's what happened to Lofton.
Lofton, like Bonds,
didn't even get enough votes to stay on the ballot for a second year. That was what
bullshit. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Well, that's what Andrew Jones is on it for the first time this year. I don't know. I should get that for full list. But Andrew Jones is very comparable to Lofton in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I don't he's going to make it to a second ballot at least, but there's no way they can put him in that quickly. Let's see. Based on saying war, it can't be war because Bonds is fifth. He would be number one. I don't know what this thing is sorted by. I have the list, but first ballots this time are Chipper Jones, Jim Thome, Andrew Jones, Johan Santana. I'm skipping some. Omar Vizquel. I'm not seeing anyone else on here I really think is an automatic, even considering them, really. So those are the big names. The highest one, Chipper Jones is an obvious first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Jim Thome.
And I think Jim, I don't know. Like, if you look at just by the Hall of Fame stat on Baseball Reference, Thome is the 10th best player on this list that's eligible this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Bonds and Clemens are first, and then Manny Ramirez, who only got 23% of the vote last year.
Yeah, people are saying he could fall off this year.
He's not going to go below five.
I don't know. People are saying he could because it's a strong ballot. It's a really, really strong ballot this year.
Yeah, and Vladimir Guerrero is in his second season.
And he's going to get in there. So Chipper Jones is an automatic.
I would say Guerrero.
And Vlad Guerrero. Trevor Hoffman's going to get in because he was very close last year.
He was at 74 last year. And Guerrero was at 71. Yeah. And now that I have the numbers, Bonds and Clemens are both about 54%.
They'll stay on.
So I think that they'll get up to about 60% this year because they have been dumping some of the older writers and adding newer writers.
Yeah. I think that Ramirez could fall off. I hope he doesn't because I think he belongs in.
At 23%, that's a big drop. I think Sammy Sosa will fall off. He was at 8% last year. I think Sosa's gone. I think Gary Sheffield could very well be gone. And Jeff Kent should be gone. I don't know how he got on a second ballot. That's ridiculous.
Larry Walker, I think, is another one that's
maybe. But so Thome has a chance, but I would definitely not say he's a guaranteed first ballot Hall of Famer. When you're a first baseman who was not a good defensive first baseman, and he wasn't a good defensive third baseman before he moved to first, and he had many years of injury problems, and all he did was hit home runs. Even with no steroid allegations.
Okay, but you're saying only those. Okay, but not like he was not dear.
But look at his numbers. Like his slugging percentage was .554. Vladimir Guerrero's was .553, but he also stole 181 bases and played incredible defense for a number of years in right field. He had an incredible arm. Specifically, he did make some bonehead mistakes out there.
Tommy's going to get in because 600 home runs is a lot of home runs. And
but I, he had he's in my, and I, Guerrero had 450, and he yeah. and he had.
I think what hurts Tommy the most is that he didn't really win a lot of accolades, which is the weird thing. Like, he only led the league in home runs once.
I always complained about that when I was younger. He was never an All-Star. I think maybe two All-Star games ever. Like,
I think he made enough All-Star games. He never won an MVP. He didn't really finish high on the ballot any of the years, which is really weird.
He did two All-Star games his entire time with Cleveland. He went to one with Philadelphia and one with Chicago. But he only went to two the entire time in Cleveland. He won one Silver Slugger ever. So he had a 22-year career. And only once was named the top first baseman.
See, I think that's because he played an offensive era with a lot of.
Well, but that's my point is he's a first baseman, and he was not the best first baseman. And that's all he did was hit, and he wasn't the best at hitting. So, like, if you're going to say he should be in the. Edgar Martinez has been on for 9 years.
Edgar's getting in this year, too, I think.
He was at 58% last year. I don't know.
And he should be in.
I think he deserves it. And he wasn't quite.
I don't know. Six, arguable. Six home runs is a lot. Look at the guys that are. And you also have to look at Tommy's WAR and his jaws.
Yeah, 762 home runs is a lot too. But and 555 is a lot. And 609, Sammy Sosa, not even going to be on the ballot. He has 609.
Yeah, and that's stupid because.
Well, that's the point. I do not think Tommy is getting in on the first year.
I think he will because he's.
But that's not even the argument I wanted to have.
Well, either way, I think the nice guy persona for Tommy helps him out. You know, a lot of guys don't get in because of steroids or because they were assholes.
I think literally every single person on the list above him, except for Chipper Jones and Vladimir Guerrero, is known for being a jerk.
Tommy's not known for being a jerk. He's also got 612 home runs. I think he's getting in. And. He passes a threshold for first baseman. If you look at his wins above replacement by Baseball Reference, the average first baseman in the Hall of Fame right now has 66.4 wins above replacement. He's got 72.9. 7 year peak WAR.
Oh, there we go. Average
in the Hall of Fame is 42.7. He's at 41.5.
I sorted by WAR now that I found the column. He's sixth highest in WAR. It knocks down some of those other players. He's actually higher than Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, he's getting in.
I think, but Vlad's numbers are probably hurt by his defensive numbers.
And Chipper Jones, like if you sort them by OPS plus on Baseball Reference, which obviously OPS plus accounts for the era they hit in. So Tommy's era was obviously a lot of offense. It was the best offensive era ever. 147 OPS plus. Chipper Jones, 141.
But obviously Jones was also a better defender.
Is 5 more wins above replacement. Or I'm sorry, 10.
Okay, but that all this stuff is considered. If you're actually talking about who's going to get in, the guy who won the World Series, the guy who actually won the World Series is better than the guy who didn't win the World Series.
Okay, that's subjective, though. I mean, how many?
But that's how the voters go. That's how this works.
Right, that's entirely stupid because you can't. How are you going to vote for a player who doesn't get in because he didn't play on a World Series team? I mean, look at I guess I'm not a really good example. There's got to be tons of guys in the Hall of Fame who play on god awful teams.
Ty Cobb.
Okay, I mean, who? See, I don't know.
I don't think Ty Cobb ever won a World Series. I think he only went to one in like 1909 or something like that.
Didn't Ryan Sandberg get in? Is he in?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Ernie Banks is. I mean, he's one of the greatest players ever.
Ryan Sandberg is in. And you know how many times
trash every Cubs player?
Ryan Sandberg made the postseason twice in his entire career. He's in. You can't dock Ryan Sandberg because the Cubs were shitty during the years he was in.
Some people do. This is way out of what I want to talk about.
People lose their friggin' ballots.
John's going to get annoyed. I wanted to talk about Omar Vizquel. We talked about Keith Law's book on here, right?
I want to say briefly. Maybe we.
I wrote I wrote a Burning River Book Club on it, so you can search Burning River Book Club and you can find all the books I've read in the last 10 years.
I've read the book, so.
But this one is of Smart Baseball. And Smart Baseball, one of the cooler things, and I wrote about this one reason I reviewed it, he focuses on two Indians in great detail. One of them is on how stupid it was that Francisco Lindor bunted so much in his rookie year. And we all agreed on him, and I'm so glad that he actually went in there and looked up bunt attempts and like every single bunt attempt and showed the results, and I think that was great. But the other thing was an argument of why Omar Vizquel should not be a Hall of Famer. And it was timely, and his books are getting a ton of plugs right now because of it. It's like everybody who's against Omar being in the Hall of Fame is just like, read Smart Baseball. That's it. That's the argument. Just read it. And I have. And I'll say I was never 100% on him. I remember watching the games in the 90s and sitting there and being like, you know what? We haven't had a Hall of Famer since the 1950s. I think there's four on this team. I remember thinking it was Bell, Tomey, Ramirez, and either Lofton or Vizquel. Like that was my thinking. Is there are 4 to 5 Hall of Famers on this team right now?
And you're not wrong.
That's how incredible it was.
Lofton and Ramirez should both be in.
But Lofton didn't make it, and he got booted the first time. Bell, I think, made 2 ballots, and that was it. Tomey is yet to be seen what kind of thing he's going to give. I think he's a second ballot guy. I really do. Just based on what's happened the few years and how stacked the ballot is, I think he's a second season guy. You can say he's a first. We'll see who's right. So I do think that's one guy. But Omar wasn't on my list back then because he's primarily a defensive specialist. And we've seen like with guys like Lofton who get pushed aside, there's very few center fielders in the Hall of Fame at all. There's a lot of shortstops because that's where your superstar athletes go. But there's very few center fielders because they don't value that position defensively like they do in the actual game. Like there's a disrupt between how much the player is valued in the baseball game as they're playing it and then how much is valued after his career is over. And so they don't put that value on defense that they would during during an actual game. But the argument against Omar is that he wasn't that good of a defender. And that because he wasn't as good as people thought he was, his bat being so terrible takes him out of consideration. And I would argue against comparing him to the players of his age. I know everybody wants – you have to compare to the era. But he was a different style hitter. He wasn't doing that. So I don't think that's fair to compare him in OPS or WAR or any of those things. You have to look at different things of what he was doing as a hitter because he was never trying to be that type of hitter. He wasn't trying to be A-Rod. That wasn't him.
Okay, but that's because he wasn't capable, not because he wasn't trying.
Well, no, but I just think like that's – he wasn't – yes, he wasn't that good of a hitter, but he was still one of the top hitting shortstops in baseball at the time. Shortstop was never a position. Yeah, until – he was around before A-Rod and Nomar and Jeter. He was around for a couple years before those guys came out.
I don't know. Omar never had a –
He was never the best.
Peter, A-Rod made his debut in 94. Omar was only 4 or 5 seasons in at that point.
Yeah, that's a few years. And Jeter was, what, 96?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And Omar only played a couple of years.
Omar had a 779 OPS. He had a 98 OPS plus. So he was okay. He was average.
But I think, but for a shortstop, he was better than most shortstops at the time. They had Felix Fermin. Like that's what they were used to in Cleveland. Even Julio Franco was not like this super power hitting shortstop for years. From Lou Boudreau on, I guess Woody Held was good, but he was also a third baseman part time. They never had anybody hit as well until Omar. Omar was like the best hitting shortstop, at least for the Indians, for decades, going back decades.
Sure.
And he was one of the better shortstops in the league. It wasn't until after him that they really went, oh, shortstops are also going to hit home runs, like Miguel Tejada coming up and winning the MVP for Oakland. Like that, it was after Omar came up that they really had that shortstop revolution. And now it's going back the other way a little bit, where the focus is back on defense with guys like Andre Elton Simmons and Lindor.
Lindor hit 30 something.
They
runs.
Still hit. They both hit, and Altuve hits. But Didi Gregorius doesn't hit as much, and he's another, you know, like defensive specialist. So I think there is more of a trend back towards that defensive first guy. So I don't think you should hold Omar's offense against him as much as they are. And I don't think the argument he made in the book Smart Baseball about how Ozzie Smith was better compared to his contemporaries than Omar was, I don't think that holds up, because they were very similar hitters to each other. Like, I think you can compare some stat lines across years. You don't have to compare just, like, WAR is based on the era you played, and OPS Plus is based on the era you played. I don't think you always have to normalize. I think sometimes you can just check, like, compare players directly from era to era, and it's not that far off, especially if they're similar type players.
They are, and you're right. I mean, and just for the sake of argument, I mean, Omar's OPS Plus is 82. Ozzie Smith is 87. Although you could argue that, I know you said that not to compare eras, but an 87 OPS Plus in Ozzie Smith's era.
Well, no, but that is already adjusted for era.
Right, but if you look at what he did, his OPS Plus of 87 in that era of offense compared to the
environment. Well, no, but that's what the whole point is, it's adjusted. So, yes, by saying his is 87 and Omar's is 82, you're saying that Ozzie was the better hitter. But if you compare their stat lines, like just straight across, Omar's going to look like the better hitter because his era had more offense. So I think there's a mix between the two. You can't just say this is the be-all end-all of stats. And I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think at any point I said that. I just don't think you can dismiss him that easily and say he's trash.
That's the biggest argument with Omar, is that everybody wants to compare him to Ozzie Smith. Well, if Ozzie Smith's in the Hall of Fame, then Omar has to be in the Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, the weird thing is, and I said the other day, I think I tweeted to Mike Hattery, I personally don't know how much to trust historical defensive metrics, because that's your biggest argument, is that defensive metrics aren't reliable, aren't 100% reliable today. And then
the ones where they've went through the box score.
They don't have the data on Omar on Fangraphs. So if you look at,
I'm trying to think of what's the stat called where they actually went through every single box score, like, ever, and see where the ball was hit and if a guy made a play or not. And they based off that, is it defensive run saved or?
Well, defensive run saved is on Fangraphs. They don't have that.
There's a stat. I'm going to look it up now. But there's a stat, they have numbers for people from, like, the 1920s.
Yeah, it's total zone fielding runs above average.
Total zone rate.
Yeah, and Omar sits at 134, where Ozzie Smith sits at 239. So it's a huge gap. Again, I don't know how much you can trust those. Like, I can't say for certain. Maybe somebody else can. I can't say for certain.
That's the most accurate. That has to be the most accurate.
Maybe. I mean, I maybe it is. I don't know. Someone else can say that. They have Baseball Information Solutions has a defensive run save metric that's from 2003. So obviously Ozzie doesn't have that.
Don't take Omar's numbers from 2003.
Right. So I mean, if you're looking at this historical metric where total zone fielding runs above average, Ozzie Smith blows him away. And some of the years that Omar won a Gold Glove, the metrics don't match. Like, the metrics just simply don't add up to being what Ozzie Smith is. And then if you go on to look at their WAR, Omar's WAR is almost 20 wins behind the average Hall of Fame shortstop, whereas Ozzie Smith, who obviously skews this a little bit, has 10 more wins than the average shortstop in the Hall of Fame.
Well, if you look, that's a little unfair too, because some of the great, like I mentioned Ernie Banks, but like Lou Boudreau is a top three hitter in Indians history, and he happened to play shortstop. Joe Sewell is a top 10 hitter in Indians history, and he happened to play shortstop. I feel like that skews it a little bit with the WAR being so high for your average Hall of Fame shortstop, because there have been so many. Honus Wagner played largely that have been so good. I do want to say on the fielding metrics, though, anybody who brings up the fucking eye test is a fucking moron. Yeah, so you watched Joe Sewell play shortstop and then compared that to Barry Larkin?
Right. There you go.
Tell me how World War I was. I'd love to know. Like, there's no way you could possibly compare players over eras. Even if you, like, if you were a kid when Ozzie Smith was playing and then you were slightly older watching Omar and now you're watching Lindor, you're going to have your own personal biases, probably favoring the guy when you were really young. Although it depends on what type of person you are. Because I personally favor Lindor over Omar or anyone else I've ever seen.
I mean, look at this.
With the Indians, at least. But it's a bias because I'm seeing him now and I'm seeing him make the plays right now. Like, so it's most fresh in my mind. And I'm not one of those guys who are like, well, remember when. So to me, like, he is the greatest Indians defensive shortstop I've ever seen. But I'm going to base it off of the defensive metrics because I can't trust myself.
I
can't trust
that. If you think they're an accurate guide, I can understand that. Like, okay, if you look at them right now, in 1996, Omar won a gold glove. Actually, go back to 1995. Omar won a gold glove with one total zone fielding run above average. In 96, same thing. And he made 20 errors in 96. Like, I know we're not supposed to look at errors, and that's a stupid stat.
Well, that's a problem. He did have range. But he did have range, and that creates errors when you have great range.
That's true. And then he had 97, he won a gold glove with two fielding zone runs above average. And then in 2000, he actually had -1, won a gold glove. And 01, he had -8. So, and then those were like all reputations.
Yeah, some of it is. I'd like to see the competition on those. The one gold glove I remember being so mad about was like 2003 or so when A-Rod won it. And like I was just like there weren't any stuck out players for that year at shortstop, but I think Mike Bordick had the best stats. And I was like, just give it to Mike Bordick. That guy's got nothing in life. just throw him a bone and give him a gold glove. You don't need to give A-Rod the gold glove. You're going to give him the MVP. Like, just give him the MVP for his hitting. You don't need to give him the gold glove too. But Omar probably had a couple like that, but
he did. And the Ozzie Smith, for comparison, because everybody wants to compare the two, Ozzie Smith's worst gold glove season, he had 3 total zone runs above average. That was his worst. Second worst after that, looks like it was 12. He never had a year in the negatives. Omar did.
Yeah, and I think they get compared just because they played in different leagues, so a lot of Indians fans never saw Ozzie play, or at least not regularly. And a lot of, you know, the Cardinals fans or National League fans didn't see Omar play that regularly. So I think there's a lot of people who are just biased because they saw one or saw the other one, and they know they're similar players defensively and offensively. So that's why they get the comparison. But I definitely, just overall.
If that's your baseline, then Omar's not a Hall of Famer. If Ozzie Smith is
especially,
your baseline.
And I don't think it's a black and white thing. I don't think it's a yes, you're a Hall of Famer, or you're off the ballot entirely. I do think he'll make a second ballot because he at least gets a little more respect than Kenny does. And, you know, maybe he gets 10% of the vote. That'll get him on another ballot. Maybe he sticks around for 2-3 years. And I think that's an honor to be able to stick around on the ballot for 2 or 3 years. I think that's something that you should say. Yes, I stuck around on the ballot for 3 years, and that's something to be proud of.
Yeah,
and that's completely different than saying he's not a Hall of Famer. Don't vote for him at all. Like I think he deserves some votes. I think it's not a yes or no question when you're talking about as many people as voting for the Hall of Fame. There's definitely some gray area in there. The last thing, we're going super long. The last thing I wanted to say is hilarious. People have been talking about Hoffman and why they're not going to vote for Hoffman because he's just a reliever. And if he was a better pitcher, he'd pitch more innings. Like, why did he pitch so few innings compared to these other guys? And Billy Wagner's on the ballot again for the third time. Brad Lidge, Jason Isringhausen. There's a few closers on here. And then somebody, the one argument pro closer was that, well, if they're the best at what they do, shouldn't they be in the Hall of Fame? And they're making arguments like, well, he's still a baseball player, and he's still like, and all these arguments, and they think it's a legitimate argument. I just want to come back at them and be like, well, what about Johnny McDonald? There's no argument that he's not a professional baseball player. He was the best at what he did for a very long time. He played for a really long time. He was the best defensive replacement shortstop on a lot of different teams. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's a utility man. I mean, so if you're the best closer, I don't care, because with the exception of Mariano Rivera, I totally see the argument of closers shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame at all, because if they were any good, they'd be pitching 200 innings a year instead of 60.
Yeah, but you also have to adjust for the era. Like, that's the other thing, too. You got to the era dictates using relievers, and I think Rivera's postseason.
Come on. Rivera deserves to be in because he was something special, and he was like a groundbreaking player. What he did was incredible.
Look at his postseason numbers, too.
The fact that he did it with one pitch and that he did it for so long and so great every single year, and he never – like, usually relievers fall off a little bit. Even Hoffman, these guys fall off a bit. But Rivera kept doing it. He had Eric Gagne season every year, like Eric Gagne's prime season, but he kept doing it over and over again. So that's a completely different situation.
I also can't say that you should vote for Hoffman until Lee Smith is in, because – Lee Smith was better than Trevor Hoffman, and if you don't think Lee Smith's a Hall of Famer, then Trevor Hoffman's not either. Yeah.
Of course, the argument for Hoffman to be in is kind of like your Tommy argument, which is he had a lot of one stat that people like. Of course, the save is a ridiculous, arbitrary stat, whereas a home run is a stat that actually means something because the baseball left the playing field. It was a run, at least one run. When it happened. So
here's something interesting too. Before we wrap up again on Omar, the guy who created Baseball Reference, Sean Forman, just tweeted that you should not vote for Hall of Fame Omar Vizquel for the Hall of Fame. He says it's very, very, very wrong. Just to be clear, it's bad, like really bad. Definitely something no one should do. Avoid checking his name. Really, it's just bad. Don't do it. Just don't, please. So the guy who created Baseball Reference thinks that Omar Vizquel doesn't deserve any votes.
I honestly, we didn't do it this year. We did Tribe Time Now. We did the voting last year, I think. Maybe it was 2 years ago now. I don't remember. But we have like submitted ballots before. And I generally did not – I've thought about it in the past at least every year. And I generally am a guy that like, I'm going to vote for five guys. Bonds, Clemens, probably this year would be like Jones, Tomy.
Who was that?
Ramirez.
You wouldn't vote for all 10? You wouldn't use all 10.
But this year I would use all 10.
All right. So who are your 10? Because I've got 10 already.
Okay. Well, and right after this, I got Bonds, Clemens, Jones. I hate Schilling, but he deserves it. I wouldn't vote for him just because he's an asset. so there's my decency clause or whatever they call it. That's where I'm cutting my line. Tomy definitely, Ramirez definitely, Edgar Martinez, Andrew Jones. I think I'm gonna stop there. I don't know if that's ten. I don't think it is.
I don't know. I'm with you on. I would vote for Curt Schilling.
I'm gonna vote for Vladimir Guerrero too. That's it.
Vlad's in. I'm with you on Schilling. I don't have Schilling on my fake ballot this year. But I'm not. I if I had room on the ballot, I'd vote for him, even though he is an asshole.
I prefer Hat.
I don't care. He's an asshole. I don't care. I have Chipper Jones, I have Andrew Jones, Vlad Guerrero, Mike Mussina, Manny Ramirez, Clemens, Bonds, Edgar Martinez. I have Fred McGriff and Jim Tomy.
I guess you're voting for Tomy, you vote for McGriff. McGriff is
McGriff, okay. So The argument,
Scott Rowland is on weird, the Bruins. You didn't think Scott Rowland. I got Rowland was worth way more than McGriff. He was a great defensive player for years. He hit 300 home runs.
McGriff was a good defensive player, but I also think the weird thing is
first base.
Yes, Rowland. Rowland's an interesting argument too. I think McGriff, though, up until the last, I don't know what it's been, 5 years. Like, it used to be 3,000 hits or 500 home runs was like a guaranteed ticket to the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, I guess that's not the case anymore, but it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, Fred McGriff's got 493 home runs. If your argument is that 500 home runs is an automatic ticket to the Hall of Fame, you're going to really not vote for Fred McGriff because he had seven less?
Yeah, well, he got more votes than Gary Sheffield, who had 509, but I think it's because Sheffield had a book written about him shooting up and
yeah, and he also was not a great defender. Like, well, okay, I mean, he's an outfielder, but McGriff was a good defensive first baseman. But if your argument is solely that 500 home run hitters, if 500 is a
who would make that argument? Not Joe Morgan.
That used to be a threshold. That's what I'm saying. And I think it's silly that they would dock McGriff from the Hall of Fame.
I think we shouldn't vote for another pitcher until another guy wins 300.
Yeah, exactly. That's stupid. So it's not going to happen. Okay, but guys are more likely to hit 500 home runs now than pitchers win 300 games.
Yeah, like they're going to hit 5 home runs in 3 seasons.
Right, like Sabathia is like the only guy who's got a shot to win 300, and maybe Kershaw or Bumgarner. I don't know.
I'll start singing you out.
Okay. Okay. That's it, right? We're done.
Satellite's gone way up to Mars. Do 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 do. Soon it will be filled with.